This is Ruby Rod coming to you from Falston Paradise.
What?
Well, no, in fact, this is Art/Geek with Russ Olson and...
And Chris Bailey.
And no, we're not really coming from an alien spaceship orbiting a faraway world, even though Chris is looking at me like I'm from Mars. I wanted to start this episode of Art/Geek that way because we're going to, in part, talk about movies today, and I had just seen one of my favorite movies. Actually, I saw it and then I watched it again. Have you ever seen The Fifth Element, Chris?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember the DJ character played by Chris Tucker?
Yeah.
His name was Ruby Rod.
Oh, I forgot that.
Yeah.
In fact, that's Terry Gilliam.
The
director?
No. It's not Terry Gilliam. I can't remember the guy's name, but it's definitely not Terry Gilliam.
Okay. Because he did one of those and did a premiere in Georgetown and was actually at the show.
Oh, okay.
But it came out around that time.
Yeah, 1997, I think. Yeah, in case the listener doesn't know, The Fifth Element is a wonderful science fiction romp and a lot of it is told from the point of view of a DJ who's doing this radio show live while aliens are shooting at each other and everything. I was watching it again and it just sort of reminded me of podcasting because now I think about having microphones and things like that. And in fact, this is, I'm feeling really pretty up because this is a red letter day for Art/Geek for a number of reasons. One reason is that I'm talking into my new microphone, which I hope will improve our production values. And we've got a new version of Audacity here, so I hope you can hear us all in startling champagne glass shattering clarity.
HD, HD radio, yeah, whatever that is.
Right, that's about 90 hertz is actually what we're...
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, mono.
Post-processing.
But the other reason that this is a red letter day in the world of Art/Geek is that this is our launch day. We've been doing this, recording these podcasts now for months and playing around with it and trying to make the sound right and trying to decide what it is we're going to talk about. And today, even though it's a long time ago for you, if you're listening to us, today...
So we may be dead now.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's something to look forward to. but today is the day for us here in the weird time-shifted land of podcasting that we launched Art/Geek on the internet. So, yay!
Yay! 2009, yeah. It's looking up.
Okay. And it is, of course, 15 degrees out here in Virginia, which is in the American South. That's 15 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about, minus 10 degrees centigrade. So it is very cold. So I'm happy to be here with you, not in the cold. But we were going to talk about movies and comic books and storytelling. And the thing that all three of those art forms have in common, I guess, is the fact that they're sort of linear. They happen over time, in a sense, or at least they're not like a painting where it's just there. They both storytelling, where someone just stands up in a group of people, which is something I kind of like to do every now and then, and tell a story, and actual film, cinema, and comic books, they all have a kind of a second or a third dimension to them. They go in a way, and two of them are told with pictures, and one is utterly without pictures. Two of them are told with sound, and one of them is utterly without sound. That would be the comic book. I guess unless you're eating cheese doodles or something, then there is some sound.
Well, or it could be, could be online with
that's true.
Enhancements.
With sound effects and
sure.
Things like that.
Music.
Yeah. And so anyway, I thought that would be something we could talk about on this very major day in the history of art and science and Art/Geek.
Right, because Art/Geek is linear. It has been static and unmoving, but now it's linear.
Now it's moving.
We're moving forward.
Yeah. They say, you know, we've talked about this, that 80% of success is just showing up. Well, I think we're at least halfway there.
We are we're both there.
Yeah.
We've got that much.
Okay.
This is actually an interesting topic for me because I think about storytelling in comics a lot. And And it is very linear, and in fact, that's what makes it different from any other kind of art, that you've got a sequence, you've got a thread. Uh-huh. I don't know, I'm sure there are examples of it, where people have broken out of the form and changed the, you know, moved the middle to the beginning and that sort of thing, taken it out of a normal, time. I'm sure that Superman probably did that back in the 30s.
Uh-huh.
I'm guessing. I can't think of any offhand, but the two films I can think of that most notably did that were starting with Pulp Fiction.
Right.
In the
sort. I'm still not exactly sure what the sequence is in Pulp Fiction. Every now and then I think about that and I wonder if it doesn't bite back on itself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. In fact, I think they might have a couple of concentric circles happening once. Another one that was talked about a lot when it came out for that very reason was a Memento about a guy who completely lost his memory. The only situation where I've seen where somebody's actually worse off than I am about memory. I don't have to write things on my hands yet, but
you're getting there.
Occasionally I do.
Yeah.
But some people even wondered if it was just a normal kind of a whodunit story, and then they took it out of sequence. But the writer insists that was the way it was written all along.
Right.
And I thought it was a pretty compelling story because it left the viewer really up in the air and wondering what was happening, more so than had they just told it, you know, the straight story. It would have been kind of not dull. I think the character himself was pretty interesting, but it added to the chaos and it illustrated, gave us a sense of what his life must be like, where every day is new and unknown.
Right. So somebody I used to know used to say that whenever they'd come across someone who was particularly dense and maybe just not getting the point, they would, out of earshot, say, a goose wakes up in a new world every day, which kind of captures, you know, in a crude way what you're saying there.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things, you know, thinking about the fifth element again, one of the parts of that movie that I like in terms of its storytelling is it's almost built like a you know, music video with the way it's edited. And they do a lot of the critical moments in the story will be they will have a scene and somebody will be talking and then they'll cut to some other scene and that person will be saying the next word in the sentence and then they'll cut back, and it's really well done and it moves the story ahead very effectively. Like, they don't have to say, oh, the good guys hid the things that everyone are trying to find away, and the bad guy discovers it. They both, one talks about it, and the other one discovers it in exactly the same sentence, and it's a really nice bit of storytelling.
I'm trying to think how we could do that when we edit this tape. give me a little while. I'll figure it out.
Yeah. Is there any requirement that it make any sense? Because if not, I've got an idea.
Well, I have to go back and watch the movie and see if that made any sense when they did it.
But that's one of the things. I guess I should mention that my dad was a huge storyteller. My dad could tell stories. My dad grew up in the Depression, and he could tell stories about the Depression that would make you simultaneously laugh and cry. You know, that it was, you know, his childhood was so horrible just in terms of the deprivations of going through all that. But he had these hysterically funny stories.
Which is the hallmark of a good story.
Yeah.
Having a little bit of both.
Yeah. And in my own way, I've tried to sort of carry on that tradition. And a few years ago, I read, what's the Scott McClellan book? Understanding Comics? Is that the guy's name?
Yeah.
Scott McClellan?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have it right? And he talked about how a lot of the important things that happen in comics actually happen in the margin or the gutter, the space between between the pictures, that you don't want to say everything explicitly and show everything. You want to sort of move the story forward in jerks and let people fill in their imagination in those empty spaces between the pictures. And that is, if you ever listen to someone who's got a really good story going and who's really good at it, they do that. And, you know, I do this presentation, which is mostly storytelling, about the first moon landing that I think you've probably heard. And whenever I try and make this point, I go back to that and point out that never in the whole hour or something that I tell that story do I ever actually say, and then they landed on the moon. It's always, it's a right before and right after, because you can't really experience that. You got some big moment. You can't really experience the moment. It's, you're saying I do and suddenly you're married. You know?
Right.
You see the car coming and then you're talking to the cop.
Right. You don't, you don't need to spell it out.
Yeah.
That description, I mean, the minister doesn't have to say that.
Yes.
He said, I thee wed, but it's not saying, okay.
So are you married on
Here's the line we just crossed.
Are you married on the I, the, or the wed? Do you know what I mean?
When he puts his hands down.
Yeah.
I think it's done.
Yeah.
Actually, I just realized that comics are constantly doing that because they have to leap.
They can't move because of static pictures.
Well, not just that, but I mean from story to story, like if it is, let's say, Superman as the quintessential comic example, an issue only comes out, what, once a month?
Something like that,
and
yeah.
And so they'll draw in the, not necessarily in the gutter, but they'll say meanwhile or later.
Yeah, yeah.
Or,
yeah. Or it's just
back in episode
later.
80. Yeah. And so they do have to tie it together somehow so that the person who is trying to understand it can follow along.
Right.
And the trick with something as oversimplified as a comic is you have to do it with the least amount of words and pictures as possible, but especially words. You don't want to clutter up the page with words.
Right.
And you don't want to say it like you just said with the getting married. You don't want to ever have to spell it out, although you'll see that the mark of a bad comic, and certainly a bad comic made into a bad film, is where you have a narrator saying exactly what's about to happen or what happen, instead of just letting
and
it
then,
happen.
And then Bruce Wayne was so distraught from the death of his parents.
And it's always the death of the parents or the wife and kid.
Yeah.
Is always the motivator why the guy turns to a life of either crime or being a superhero.
Well, just as an aside, you know, Disney is the quintessential family-oriented company, right? And they make these family-oriented movies. Have you ever noticed how many Disney movies feature fractured families?
Oh, yeah.
There's hardly a living set of parents in, you know, if you think of, Beauty and the Beast or Cinderella or any of those old classic Disney movies, The Lion King, right? The dad dies.
Right.
And
well, historically, they're either shot or eaten or captured by pirates.
Right. And then there's Sleeping Beauty, where her parents just kind of blow her off. They'd, you know, if that happened today, they'd be in court.
Right.
But
Pinocchio was kind of the Immaculate Conception thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been going back and watching classic cartoons from the 40s to try to understand what the masters, and particularly Disney, but there were a lot of other studios like Warner Brothers or MGM that were doing some really groundbreaking work in, not comics, but it's taking the visual turning it into a movie. And in order to do that, you even had to simplify the drawing even more.
Right.
Because now you're going to have to move it, and you're going to have to not just move it sequentially, but move it in a three-dimensional space or give it the appearance of moving in a three-dimensional space. So it has to be constructed in such a way that it's believable.
Right.
Or at least fairly believable, even if that means in a comical way where somebody's eyes pop out or they're you know, the wolf's mouth opens, bigger than the entire body.
Isn't there, there's this whole thing, I think it actually goes back to Aristotle, where in stories, people like, let me see if I can get the words right. People, if you have a story, and the story could either zig this way or zag that way, and you're trying to construct the story, you're trying to write the story, that your audience will like, what is it? They will prefer the impossible, I'm really not saying this right. Basically,
that sentence is impossible, yeah, improbable.
Right, improbable, yeah. And impossible. Basically, that people will prefer something that seems likely but is obviously impossible to something that that is possible but seems very unlikely.
Okay.
And the example in some book that I read was in a movie, if someone finds a tape player, okay,
mm-hmm.
and for whatever reason, they drop it on the floor. One of the things that's very likely to happen in a movie is that the tape player will start playing.
Right, right.
If you saw that in the movie, you wouldn't think twice.
No.
How many times do you suppose you would have to drop a tape player before it would start playing?
You'd have to aim it just right. And I don't even know, you know, like, I'm thinking of an old...
An old cassette player. It's darn near impossible.
And yeah, and because I was thinking about a modern appliance piece of equipment is flat on the front.
Yeah.
So you'd almost have
it's deliberately designed so that it won't do
so
that.
So it wouldn't kick on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. That's probably a common device in
right, right. But movies. It's not absolutely impossible, but it's almost impossible for it actually to happen. But it seems plausible.
Right.
It's, you know, as opposed to, I don't know, you could go outside just as, if you were writing a story and you wanted to get rid of some character and it was raining that day and he went outside, one way to get rid of him is to have him be hit by lightning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unless your story is about lightning and he's a storm tracer or God's mad at him or something like that, if you have a character go outside and get hit by lightning, your audience is going to be ticked off at
right.
you.
Yeah.
Even what's, though that's a realistic
yeah,
possibility.
When is this really going to happen?
Yeah.
My mom's house has been hit, I think it's been at least three times, but twice it came through the same outlet and killed the television. Now, I'm thinking switch to radio. Or, you know,
I'm thinking plug the TV in.
Yeah, somewhere else. Yeah.
Can I recommend the surge protector for you?
Well, I think she even had one. Yeah. Now she's got the full setup or whatever. She's got a tin roof, lives on top of a mountain.
Oh my goodness.
So,
okay.
You know,
yeah.
in her case it's plausible.
Yeah. We're actually getting fairly off of the subject, but I remember I used to read Byte magazine religiously. If you were a geek in the maybe 80s or 70s, mm-hmm. you read Byte magazine, which sort of eventually grew to the point that it looked like a mini Sears catalog coming, or, you know,
wow.
real thick
with
kind of
ads
thing.
and
these long, long technical articles. And there was a guy, who fortunately is still around, I think, Jerry Purnell, who's a science fiction writer, but was a very early adopter of computers. You know, he started writing with computers back in the Apple II kind of days when it was an odd thing to be doing for a freelance writer. And so over the years, he was certainly interested in it, and over the years, he got more and more technology. And he wrote this regular column in Byte magazine, like, using computers from a regular person's point of view, which back then was kind of a unique point of view.
Yeah.
But he eventually, I guess, had a house that filled up with computers because, you know, he's writing for this major magazine, and people would send them stuff, and successful, so I don't think he really wanted for money, so he could afford. Anyway, I had this picture that he had this just technology everywhere, and I remember one sad issue. His column was all about, and I probably am going to get the details wrong, but maybe down the street from where he lived or something, maybe a utility truck hit a pole, or maybe there was some lightning, but a very, very high tension wire broke and fell on his local service wires. And so this pulse of electricity, very high voltage electricity, came through his house wires and went through surge protectors and just fried everything.
Oh,
just,
man.
You know, it was not like a surge, like a lightning strike kind of surge. It was something well beyond that. Now, what are the chances? I can't remember when this happened, but how many houses were full of computers back then?
Yeah.
And, you know, so if you put that in the movie, people would probably not really believe it too
much. Right, right. How often does a pole go down? Actually, what would happen is, or in real life, I think, is that they would somehow, the insurance company would find a way to say that the computers drew the power.
Yes.
And it was only because the pole actually fell that he wasn't liable for it.
Yeah. Again, we're sort of getting off the topic a little bit, but I remember, I think it was again back in the 80s, I had a friend who had owned a house, I think it was in England at the time, and I guess the house is still in England, but he had a rubber boat, you know, a sort of inflatable rubber boat, but a very significant one, and his house was broken into or something, and the boat was stolen, and he made a claim on his insurance company, and his insurance company pointed out the clause in his policy that explicitly excluded inflatable boats.
Of course.
Of course. Okay, well, I think we've really barely even picked at this topic, but I think our time is about up for this episode of Art/Geek. So I am Russ Olson.
And Chris Bailey. See you next week.